To have a good harvest, one must plant good seeds and must also use the right kind of fertilizer. The carrots have grown large and firm. How good they will taste.
Well, everybody, you've made it to your favorite day of the week. That's right. It is Thursday, and it is your favorite day because we're here. We're here to keep you company as we talk about fertilizer. Batavia rolls her eyes gently, just gently today, not too much. And I know some of you are like, nope, never mind, click. But just hang with us. Let's see. Is it really worth it? Before we get started, though, I do want to say this. Come buy some seeds, link below from us. Everything is direct sowable for the season, so please do that. Get the planter app, enjoy that, and become a subscriber, right? Booyah. All right, Batavia, let's start off the bat right away. Do you add fertilizer to your garden?
Sometimes.
So, yes.
My answer is sometimes. Next question.
So, yes.
Look, someone 22 hours ago wrote on a video from, like, that has to be 2022 or something. Wow, looks like a whole lot of fertilizer and cow manure, exclamation mark.
Is that a good comment or a bad comment?
I don't know. I didn't know quite how to take it, but my response was definitely a lot of compost, not so much fertilizer, as I am consistently inconsistent with fertilizer applications and routines. So yep. That's a longer version of the answer.
Yes, yes. I respect that answer. And I know that to be true of you as well from private conversations we've had. I use fertilizer. There it is. I said it. I'm a fertilizer addict. But there's all kinds of different things. So you've got, first of all, you've got the group of people who use fertilizer and love it. And then you've got the other group of people who have convinced themselves that they don't need fertilizer and they don't use it. Mm-hmm. And we need to kind of break this down because there's different levels that we can use in order to achieve the results that we want. Make sense?
Yeah.
And also at the same time, do you think that we should be demonizing fertilizer? Like, because it's very demonized out there. It's frowned upon by a lot of people.
I didn't realize it was.
Talk about it on your YouTube channel. See what happens.
Okay. Yeah, I shall bring the... Sure, I'll invite that into my garden home. So there are definitely pockets of the internet and the garden world that I don't kind of get looped into.
Right.
And I think you could be like spot on when it comes to how much or how little you talk about it kind of brings the thing out. My fertilizer brings all the boys to the yard. I thought, hey, people are actually interested in it because I get asked that question all the time.
Yeah.
You know, on comments for my videos, I think people look at my garden and think, all right, what do I need to add to my garden? What fertilizer are you using? Gosh, I wish they called me Young Batavia. Young Batavia.
Yeah, it's become my name. You know that, right?
I know.
Like now people are like Young Ben. Like somebody ordered some seeds the other day. And they left a review and they were like, Young Ben did it. And I'm like, how am I Young Ben now?
I don't know where it came from. I don't think it's the difference in our ages because it's actually not that big of a difference.
It's huge.
Listen, brother, I am feeling old and rickety, and I'm generally one that's confident. I've never fudged my age, but I feel a little bit sensitive about it.
I'm sorry,
you see
ma'am.
Me shifting with the way I'm sitting, I'm like, is this just age? Is this lack of exercise? Is this the extra pounds that has my back aching at noon? Like, I've put in not even a fourth of a day's work, and I am done. All right, so I can see the idea of adding what some would consider a chemical, right? Which I believe I believe all fertilizer to one degree. I mean, almost anything could be considered a chemical. So I'd call it a chemical too, to your garden is a bad thing. And I think that a lot of people just don't understand kind of the life cycle of growing food and the like. Food, I'll just leave it at food because I'll lump in herbs, vegetables, and fruit, all into that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, you know, a lot of people say, and this is what I believe, when people are like, I just add compost, I don't even need fertilizer. Well, in a sense, compost is a fertilizer, to a sense. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, it's like, mm-hmm. if you do worm castings, that's a fertilizer. Mm-hmm. You know, if you slaughter your chickens and pour the blood out there, that's fertilizer. You know, it's all natural. Well, that's blood meal, basically. Mm-hmm. It's just a more raw form of it would be, you know, liquid blood, which is, ugh. But, you know, that's all fertilizer. So we need to take that with a grain of salt. When people say, like, I don't use this, well, in a way you do. But what we're referring to in this episode is, like, bagged fertilizers, mm-hmm. liquid fertilizers, mm-hmm. Store-bought fertilizers, stuff like that. And just going to save you some time if you're here to hear the homemade recipe for fertilizer. We're not going to give you one because that's not what we do.
So, appreciate you saving me time, man. Yeah. All right, I'm going to see you on the next episode.
No, actually, see ya.
Really, really good call out there.
We get a lot of questions about that.
Okay, yeah. And, well, thanks for letting me know, Leonard. Gosh, you know, sometimes I do think he keeps things away from me just so I don't, you know, it doesn't keep me up at night.
But I mean, that's what they do.
Mm-hmm. That's what the Leonards do.
That's what the Leonards do. So, at what point do we talk? I'm trying to think of how to break this down because it's kind of complicated.
Well, I'd like to start with.
Thank you.
No problem at all. You're welcome. Well, wait till you hear where I start.
Never mind. I take it back.
I'd like to start with kind of the base, which would be whatever your growing soil is, whatever your dirt is, right? I think that if we are agreeing that if you are continually growing food, at some point fertilizer will need to be introduced. I'd like to make that agreement with you.
Yep.
Batavia and Ben Shake. And so if we start off from that point, now you need to go back to what your soil is to begin with. And I think there's something like this is a quiet part out loud. This is going to take us off track a little bit, but you're going to do your job and you're going to get us right back on point. And you're going to figure out where to fold this little bit I'm about to say in later. So there is absolutely a level of impatience that current day gardeners have. Many current day gardeners have. You see it in the form of buying soil. So if you live, you know, if there's your typical home that you live in with a yard, you have dirt. Right. So I'm not talking about all of the many gardeners that live in apartments and in condos and things that don't have any kind of say or rights to that dirt. I'm not talking about y'all, you know, love y'all too. But a lot of us start off with the point of we have dirt. We just don't want to spend the time nurturing and caring for that dirt to get it to a point where it can really feed our plants in a healthy way. That includes me, right? You know,
well,
let me finish my thought. In my very first gardens, kind of stumbled into, I used what I had, but it wasn't your typical me pulling up, you know, grass and then let me see what I have here. Like, no, it was someone had been doing stuff in that little, you know, slot of land before. But every other garden that I've built, you know, beyond the things that are like on the concrete patio, there's no dirt that's going to grow out of your concrete patio. Yeah, the front yard garden is a great example of all of that was soil that I could have been working on these past years to grow in, you know.
Well, I want to be fair. And I agree with you that I think there's a lot of people that are impatient. And I kind of look at it a different way from you, as you is. When I say that, I mean, it's like you start a garden, you don't get the results, and you quit. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't understand that, you know, next year will be a little bit better and it'll be a little bit better. Like there's, you know, we went through the COVID wave of gardeners and a lot of people that are listening to us they came to gardening in COVID and they've stuck with it. But there's a lot of people who did not stick with it. I go as far to say when it comes to the soil and stuff like that, it's almost like I want to say it's like people don't understand how to feed the soil, to feed the plants. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And when I say feed it, I don't necessarily mean. And again, remember, for this conversation, we're talking about bagged and store-bought fertilizers. I don't think people understand, like, it's not all about the fertilizer. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The fertilizer is And a healthy garden is the icing on the cake with the cherry on top. It's like that. It's that thing that pushes, in my experience, over the edge to get more and sooner. That's what my experience is. But that doesn't mean it's absolutely necessary, but there's a lot of work that goes into maintaining soil to not have to fertilize as much. I still believe that every garden should get a dose of fertilizer every season, at least one. That's what I think. How much you do in between, that's up to you, but I think it's a good starting point and it gets you off and running, and then you can kind of manage it from there. That's my belief.
Yeah, I think that if you look at the gardeners that we're typically speaking to, or the gardeners we believe are our audience, then yes. I think that all gardens around the world, no. I think it depends on what you're growing. You could basically say, I'm going to grow, you know, one tomato plant each year because I like fresh tomatoes in the summer, right? You know, you add some soil to whatever your pot is, maybe, and that's that. I personally believe containers do have a higher requirement for fertilizer than any other growing space. But anywho, the reason why I bring up the impatience piece, and I'm not saying it as an indictment, I'm saying it as I believe this to be true, because I think it ties into how some of us, right, the collective of us, utilize fertilizer. It's like, it's the quick fix. It's the, let me get this thing sooner, right? Like, that's the intention. I hear you say things like, I want to push out more growth, push out more growth, you know, and I know that, you know, there's an innocent part of that, you know, but it's a very calculated part of it. Calculated part of it as well by yourself. But it doesn't mean that there isn't a certain level of impatience around that, or relying on the natural occurrence of a thing, right? You know, and I still don't say that as an indictment. I just say that as something that I believe in, an observation that I have.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, I actually, as a matter of fact, I just did a video about that. It'll be really, it probably is out by the time this comes out. I just did a video about that, and you're exactly right. I'm pushing the growth because if I don't push that growth, I'm going to have an entire bed of bolted broccoli. End of story. So therefore, like, I wasted all of my time and effort, or I don't get the harvest of what I wanted. So I know that if I can push it and I can get it to grow, then great. But you got to find that happy balance. You know what I mean? So it's like, like when you fold, like in this aspect of the conversation, it comes down into timing, it comes down into feeding, and then it comes down into weather. You know, all of this stuff has to play together. And like, it took time for me to figure out, like, okay, this is what I do, this is what I'm going to do, this, that, and the other. And I was just saying on that video, I'm basically saying the same thing here as there, whatever. I've been putting those little polls out on, or quizzes on YouTube about, like, you know, what was the biggest onion ever grown or the biggest cabbage? And one of them was like, I don't remember what vegetables. It's like 60. It was like a, I think it was like a 25 pound carrot or something. How do you think they got a 25 pound carrot? You know what I mean? They pumped it full.
They were doping.
You know, they were doping it. When you go to the fair and they have, you know, the world's largest watermelon or the county's largest watermelon, how do you think they did that? You know, I mean, yes, there's genetics involved. There's, you know, there are giant types of plants, but then you've got to feed them as well, because more roots equals more fruits and more leaves equals more fruits. The first one rhymes, so I like to stick with that, but it didn't work. So, sorry.
But the philosophical part of this, which I never want to go into, but here I am.
I know. I just got sick.
Yeah, it when I think about, like, your approach to seasonal eating, right? There's something to be said about growing the thing in your area when it wants to grow, right? You know, so should you be growing as much broccoli as you are trying to grow? You know, I think we kind of give ourselves a pass on it by saying we are pushing the envelope, right? You know, so you push the envelope by planting earlier than maybe what's recommended. And then again, recommended doesn't mean what's right. Let's be crystal clear about that, right?
How can you be crystal clear about that? It's recommended.
But you push the envelope a bit. And as a part of that, it's like, Have you ever seen or heard about, I think it's like, what's the Iron Cowboy?
Yeah.
All right. So I used to do, and I'm not going to take away from my credits, but I used to do triathlons and before that, mm-hmm. like half marathons and marathons in true weekend warrior fashion. And back then, you know, you kind of consume the things that are connected to the thing you're interested in. And I remember, you know, reading about it and seeing videos about the urban cowboy or the Iron Cowboy, excuse me, who was like doing, I think it was like 50 Ironman distance triathlons. What's that? 140, you know,
he did one a day in every state.
Yeah. 140.6 miles between the swim, the bike and the run. And you look at that and say, there are supplements I'm sure he was taking during that period of time, right? There was obviously a plan in place, but he is taxing the resource that is his body, right? We know the performance on marathon or triathlon 1 versus the triathlon 20 and 40 and 50 are going to be different. So I'm saying that, and in turn, what he needs to continue to supplement this adventure increases. Right. You know, so one triathlon, your needs are very different than 50 to the opposite extreme. What I'm trying to say is when you look at some of the things we're doing in our gardens, if we're more kind of low growing, then the needs of our gardens aren't as complicated or aren't as much as when we're continuing to push our gardens.
Yeah, I love that you brought up the Iron Cowboy. So he even did one of his triathlons with pushing a handicapped individual in a stroller and towing him in a raft during that 50-day stretch. Mm-hmm. And when you bring that up, that applies, to believe it or not, to every aspect of what we're talking about right now.
Of course, so, I believe it. That's why I brought it up.
I know. I'm really glad you did. Because when I was doing triathlons and stuff as well, like this is when he was doing it. And I found out about him, watched everything about it. So what do we know about that? Yeah, he may have been taking some supplements, but he ate a lot of food. Hands down, he ate a lot of food. If you watch what he ate, it was like an open buffet. And when you do these training for triathlons and stuff,
you're burning so many calories.
A lot of people that listen to us are runners. You know, when we start surfing, our intake of food goes up, and when I stop surfing, my intake of food is supposed to go down. It takes me a while.
Come on, somebody.
That's why I got this championship belt. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm nine years in. I'm trying to make the adjustment. 9 years of retirement, saying, "Girl, bring your calorie intake down."
But we also have to go back to the giant pumpkin or watermelon because genetics plays a big part of this. And I am a firm believer that this gentleman has the genetics to do what he did. There's a lot of times when you see, like, I was vegan for 10 years and people are like, "Yeah, I run marathons. I ran all these marathons, this, that, and the other, and I ate nothing but vegan." Man, I tell you what, I struggled with my activity level while I was vegan. And the reason why I started eating more meat was because when I was surfing, I was recovering better. Well, take it to the same extent, like, he's naturally driven to do that. Most people can't do that. There's very few people on this planet that can do 140.6 miles over 50 days and travel. Like, one of the days he had to go from Hawaii to Washington State.
Yeah.
And one day to go do the damn race again. Like,
and
so
still,
that's a lot.
Like, living, like, actively. He had a partner, kids, if I remember correctly, you know.
Yeah. Had his whole family with him, a whole team. And so if you think about your garden that way, you are your team's garden. In your garden, you got a team. You've got you got your plants, you got your nutrients, you got your soil, you got your sun, and then you also have the pests that are not on your team. They're your opponent. And so all of these come into factors together. And when we put the fertilizer into it, it's just like he was in that girl. Like, my garden is not quite like the Iron Cowboy, but I'm pushing it four seasons a year. Something's growing somehow, some way in there. So you've got to find ways to feed that soil, to feed the plants.
Yeah. So I look at in that analogy, the soil makeup is like really where your genetics begin.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and so there's some things that, you know, you may have gotten a good batch, a good dump of soil. Right. It may have all of the great combinations of organic matter. And, you know, we also know that even with strong genetics, depending on how you care and feed going forward, you could run into some hiccups, some road bumps, some struggles, you know.
Yeah.
And so, again, there are things that, you know, measures we take, methods that we use. And I do believe that fertilizer can be viewed as a replenishing. Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm not technical enough about this to say, you know, once you produce X amount, then you need to replenish this by doing this much of fertilizing, you know, adding compost and so on. I thank goodness that I don't need to be that technical in my garden. But I do believe in the concept, and a part of, you know, why my answer is inconsistently consistent when it comes to fertilizer is I just look at the improvements I've made over the last handful of years as improvements. But I'm also at the point where I'm like, if I do all of the other things, if I'm the Iron Cowboy and I get a really good night's sleep, right? You know, I'm hydrating really well. You know, I am keeping my stress low, right? Stress, pest pressure. You know, if I'm doing all of those things, then I have a really good shot at a good performance, right? You know, all right, damn it, give me the Red Bull, you know?
Like, yeah.
But it's not the norm for me, you know?
Right.
So again, that's just my perspective. I could have, because I've been growing for like 16 years and at this level, like for 5 years, so I kind of look at like my second act or second life of gardening started in 2019. And so based on that, at this level, I'm still like air quote new in my world, in my mind. In another 10 years, which would put me closer to 15 years growing at this level, I could have a different opinion.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, for a long time, I didn't use fertilizer. Mm-hmm. And I mean, look. We get questions a lot, and I see pictures in a lot of places with gardens, and we've got the moderator in our Facebook group at I think it's Dixie Meadows Farm. Shout out to Will. Holla. He and I were talking about this recently, and he was growing broccoli, and he gave somebody a broccoli plant, and they grew it. And then they didn't have a successful harvest or as successful. And he's like, man, what did you do? And he's like, you didn't feed the plant. You've got to feed it to get that big growth that you're looking for. You know what I mean? And so like Will is a big time fertilizer. Mm-hmm. He fertilizes a lot. Mm-hmm. Whereas like I'm fertilizing more now, and it seems like each year I'm doing a little bit more, but I'm becoming more calculated with my fertilizer. But we see it a lot of times in people. It's like, you know, my plant's all yellow, and it's like, well, yeah, it needs nitrogen, you know. Nitrogen is water soluble, so it will wash out of your garden. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's one of the things that bare minimum you can put back into it to help keep the greenery growth, keep it going, keep it pushing. And it does get more, I think that one of the reasons why a lot of people don't like fertilizer is because they don't understand it, because it can get very technical. Mm-hmm. And it can get very complicated. And the easiest way around it is like, just use a well-balanced fertilizer at planting, mm-hmm. you know, because at least you'll start to get that growth. It'll start to feed it immediately, push it. And then you can kind of, you know, it can cruise through the year. It may suffer a little bit depending on how long that plant's in the ground and how much it's going to produce, but you can keep on top of it. And it's the easiest time. I mean, you've already got it all dug up, so you just drop some fertilizer in the hole and you roll with it. You know, you've got to factor in too organic versus conventional fertilizers. Mm-hmm. Or, and when I say conventional, I don't like to use the word synthetic, but it is synthetic, and there's a difference, you know. Typically speaking, organic fertilizers are granule, and they will feed the soil as well as your plants. So even though they're feeding your plants, they will continue to break down and add organic matter to some extent to your garden. The downfall is they don't feed as fast, so they have to actually start to break down before they feed, whereas your conventional fertilizers will immediately feed the second they hit your plant.
Yeah, I think when it comes to like what I do versus what I used to do. So I before didn't do anything. And I have a handful of pictures of some piddly looking pepper plants. But generally speaking, you know, even before I kind of went all in with, you know, having, I think I have a like 4 foot by 2 foot space of grass on my property and that's it. And, you know, God bless my neighbor a couple of doors down who pushes her lawnmower down and cuts that little space of grass for me. but, you know, before that, I had, you know, mostly growing in outside of the where the cage baby is now in what would be new soil, you know, and I say that to say we can't. We need to give more credit to if you get quality soil, those first couple of years of growing in it are going to be good years, generally speaking. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, so again, there was no alarm bell that went off. Things look good. I do, again, have pepper plants then versus now. I can see a world of difference, but I've also spent more time building the soil, right? The soil that I purchased and brought in. But now if I fast forward, I feel like I'm still in a good space where the amount of growth seems normal, you know, upwards of pretty good for most of my plants. There's not a lot that I'm growing in my area that's just like kind of looking puny, right? You know, so that's a good sign. But one of the things that I do now, almost for everything that I plant at the beginning of the season, for sure, like the beginning of each of the seasons, you know, so spring crops, and summer crops and so on, is I'm adding a well-balanced granular fertilizer because it's said to feed for 2 to 3 months. Now, my garden season is generally longer than that, but a lot of that growth happens in those first couple of months, right? Think tomatoes. Planting them in May, my harvest starts in May, April, May, June, July. It's starting in late July, early August. Right. You know, that's it's putting on tomatoes or putting on, you know, green tomatoes in July. And I'm getting my first red tomatoes in August. I may come back in and top dress those plants because those plants are super important to me. You know,
top dress with what?
Another set of granular fertilizer for my tomatoes. If they're kind of greens, I will probably start with granular fertilizer in the same way, you know, and then come back in with maybe a liquid fertilizer that's focused more so on nitrogen. But for those, the frequency is recommended to be more frequent as far as, you know, every 1 week, every 1 to 2 weeks. And I'm just not keeping up with that. I'm just going to keep it really real.
Yeah, you know, I've got that drip system now that I have the injector in, and that's really helped me keep up with a better schedule, but also a more targeted approach with the liquid. And I'm when I'm referring to liquid, for me, it's a like a fish fertilizer. Yeah, it's nothing insane. Yeah. It's no, you know, anything like that. Now, I don't have anything against conventional fertilizer. I just don't use it. And I actually have used it. I got a soil test 1 year and they said, look, you need some nitrogen bad. Mm-hmm. And they gave me a recommendation and I went and I put it in. And I tell you what, I had growth, like instant growth almost. I mean, it was like I blinked my eyes and they were just perking up. So, and, you know, the beauty of this podcast now is we've been together for a long time, Batavia. I don't know if you realize that, but I remember you getting your first fish fertilizer and trying it out and being very, very inconsistent with it. But I remember you being like, you could tell the difference. And I also remember 1 year we were talking about you adding bagged soil to your garden. And we figured out that it, in fact, did have a little bit of fertilizer in it. And that was just, you know, between the compost, between the leaves, between the bag soil that had you had fresh soil going in, which is very important.
Yep.
And in that soil, you had a small amount of fertilizer. You were able, you know, that helps you produce.
That was now, a part of unconsciously my formula, right?
Yeah, you didn't realize it because I remember we were like, oh. And so,
well, I mean, I think that, listen now, talk about give credit where credit's due. damn it. Like, I realized what I was doing, but I just wouldn't describe it as fertilizing, right? You know, so this wasn't just about me topping off beds, right? You know? My ability to, in a professional setting, which this is not, to pull back that what I just did there is like supreme.
Do your eyes hurt?
No, they don't.
They went so far in the back of your head. But I'm surprised they came forward again.
My inability to do that with you, because you're my buddy, you're my pal, you know, the way we treat the people we love. No, the expression of love was me not going all the way in, me, you know, giving you a little time to reset yourself. What's your mom used to say? Fix your face.
Mm-hmm. Yo, man.
So anywho, it was kind of, I say things like I stumbled into it. And one of the we looked at it as the explanation as to why my plants weren't suffering like you would think they would, growing at that level and not fertilizing, if at all, or very inconsistently. Like, how are your plants doing what they're doing? And we were able to track back to, okay, let's look up about how much are you adding of this and how much are you adding of that? And going back to the very early days of gardening, some fresh soil in a new plant hole was the way I was taught.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so it's not just to say, oh, let's just, you know, sit around in some new digs. No, I knew that there's life that you're adding to it, so to speak.
Right.
So anywho, yeah. I mean, I'm not like some bumbling fool. Like, I don't know. Let me just dump this in here. Let me see what I get.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, no.
But I mean, you don't think about it. It's like when you buy a bag of soil, it's not like I would not think, let me phrase it differently. I would not think, hey, let me go get a bag of soil because it's got fertilizer in it. Mm-hmm. I would be thinking, hey, I need more soil. This is just a happy second benefit of it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can see like stumbled in it, calculated, whatever it is. Like, you definitely were able to get the benefits. Not to mention, you've also got to take into effect that your climate is right for the plants that you were growing at the time. You know what I mean? So there's that aspect too, because if you plant something at the wrong time of year, it's not going to grow well.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's just all there is to it.
Excellent point. The amount of times that I tried to sow broccoli in June, sow broccoli in June, I was like, I don't understand why this is not working. You know, or the puny carrots that I pulled up based on, again, sowing them in the heat of the summer, so much so where they didn't have a chance to get to full maturity. So yeah, there are definitely those moments. And I look at it to say, in addition to my climate, there is the off season. So this is where nature is doing the thing that nature does. I don't have 12 months of growing. I don't have 11 months of actively working my soil in the sense of growing, right? Because I mean, even under the snow, there are things that are percolating, 10 months, not even, you know. So again, the amount of months compared to, let's say, you and your space is very, very different. The impact that, heat has on your garden and your soil and that makeup is different, you know.
Yeah.
Very much so, like, for people that live in really, really, really wet climates, you know, that's a different garden experience when it comes to the impact on their soil, in turn their plants, and how they need to amend and or fertilize.
Yeah, I years and years and year, many years ago, when I was a marine biologist, I went and I worked on a boat out of Swan's Island, Maine. It's a very tiny island. I think they had like 200 people lived on the island. Mm-hmm. I went up there. I was just telling somebody this story the other day. It was so weird. It's like I went up there, and you got to remember, I'm from North Carolina. So this, like, when you get up in New England like that, it's a whole new world. It's a 2-hour ferry ride to the actual island. And I was going, I got to the docks, and I was supposed to meet this guy to get on his boat. And the guy walked up, and he was a police officer. And so I was like, cool, I'll talk. Because, you know, I didn't know anybody up there. It was all foggy and, like, mountainous. And it was July, and it was, like, 50 degrees. It's, like, 30 minutes from the Canadian border. And I was like, oh, are you a police officer here? He's like, I'm the police officer. So, small town.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, just so, you know, they're isolated. And the guy I was on the boat with, we caught, like, a big shark. He radioed in. Everybody in the island came to get a chunk of shark to take home to eat. And that's how they kind of, you know, they would share with each other, stuff like that. Well, we were talking about gardening when we were out at sea, and he was saying, you know, like they try to garden every year, but because of the fog and because of the temperatures and because it's so moist and so close to the sea, that they really struggle to grow tomatoes. And, you know, he was asking me about it, and I was very new to the idea of, I wasn't new to gardening, but I was new to the idea of helping people with their gardens because I was just trying to figure out my own stuff. And he was asking me about fertilizer, and I was like, at the time, I didn't fertilize. And he had said that, you know, he had, because he had lived his whole life on this island, he knew that there was a period of time when it would be warm. And so he would start to fertilize before it would be warm and typically drier. And then they could get a bulk of their harvest done. And then when the fog would roll back in and the seasons would start to change, he would just let it all go to waste. He only had like a 2 month, 3 month growing season at most. And that was it. And that was my first experience with that. And I didn't even realize it. And I was like, oh, okay, this is a very interesting concept. And that's kind of what set me down the path of fertilizing to an extent, because I was at that time I was growing in New England, but where I was, we had a normal, you know, your average growing season. There wasn't anything fantastic about it, but it would help me moving forward. And then as I got more into like fall vegetables and stuff and spring growing, I really realized with the greens that like all that fish fertilizer and blood meal and stuff like that makes a huge difference in the productivity of it. To the point to like your collard greens and stuff like that, like, you know, you're getting an amount out of a fewer plantings, which I think is really important for this conversation, too, when you're talking about people with smaller gardens. And, but, you know, yeah, you got a small garden, but yeah, you want to have an abundant harvest out of that small garden. Well, this is one of those ways you can do that.
Yeah. And I also think that when it comes to the abundance and what you want to get out of your garden and when, I think I'm just going to call out to the planting the right things at the right time once more in this episode, because, you know, we're not at all suggesting that you heavily feed a plant that really shouldn't be growing in that particular time because just because you want to get something out of it. That's just not the way. And eventually, you know, the garden turns on you for that. The garden gremlins come out at night and say, enough.
You know, that's one of the things that we talk about a lot on this show is planting the right thing at the right time. Because especially with new gardeners and even experienced to an extent, sometimes we forget that certain things can't go in the ground at certain times. You know, oh, I'd love to have a head of lettuce in August. Well, that's just not going to happen. And we need to accept that.
Yeah.
Without excessive measures being taken.
I mean, I think that if you're in the like experimental space in your garden as a gardener, that's very different than the majority of folks that we believe that listen that want to grow more food because, you know, for health reasons, for financial reasons, for the joy of gardening, no pun intended. You know, so that's a very different audience. If you want to push the limits in the sense of, all right, is it possible for me to get insert this crop? You know, like again, we talked about over the years, someone in Chicago wanting to grow tomatoes in December, you know, like, all right, there's a lot that you're going to put into that, but good luck and let me know how it goes, right?
Yeah.
I told you before that I, as an offshoot, I buy tomatoes during the off season. They're full on trash. Right. You know, so I get to the point right around now when I'm starting my tomatoes. I mean, trash. Yeah. Like really, you should give it another name when you're selling it this time of year. Right.
Right.
So when I'm starting my tomatoes, I started to think about like I'm reminded of what a tomato really tastes like. So at the there's that period of once I eat the last of my fresh tomatoes in like the fall, basically, then I get there's the regret when I start buying tomatoes again. Then I forget how good the well, I don't forget how good tomatoes are, but there's a period over the winter where it's just like, all right, fine. And then we get to spring and I'm just like, why do you do this to yourself? It's a texture thing for me, you know. Yeah. So I eat salads throughout the winter during the off season. I really enjoy the texture of tomatoes. But anywho, I say all of that to say when you look at what you want to grow when, I would never invest the time to grow tomatoes One, I'd be questioning like what the real taste is. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time to get some, you know, trash tomato. I'll just go to store and buy it for, you know, an exorbitant amount of money. not only are they trash, they're overpriced. But anywho, I'm getting off track here. I think when you look at what we're growing and the when, I think in addition to assuming that you and I are agreeing that fertilizer is important, I think we can also assume that for this conversation, folks are growing things in the correct season, and you may be trying to push the envelope at the beginning or the end of the season. And sometimes fertilizer can be a an aid to that. And that's separate and apart from like the general maintenance of your garden and fertilizing.
Well, now that we are in depth in the episode, like we are, the people who are with us still, I'm going to say this, and I think that the people listening can handle it. If there was no fertilizer, there would be food shortages across this entire planet. End of story. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just think about that. And when I say that, I mean conventional synthetic fertilizer. There would be food shortages across this entire planet. We would not be able to sustain the population that's on this earth.
My one comment, because we're too far into this episode to open this door fully, is the amount of food that we're producing, and just talk about the U.S. alone, the amount of food that we're producing, put in the back of your head, the amount of waste, right? You know, so we could probably feed the population on the amount of food that's wasted. There's no factual information there. I'm just saying, you know. What we've gotten accustomed to as far as what our needs are, what we believe our needs are, without fertilizer, there'd be some dark days.
Very dark. And so put that into perspective for the home gardener. Now, I will give you a fact. The number one energy waste in the country is food waste, food energy, calories. So there is that. But if you put that into perspective for the home gardener, why not use a little bit of fertilizer? You know what I mean? Like we're thinking like the farms and stuff, they use it constantly because they have to meet a quota. So I'm not saying use it constantly, but why not add a little bit in the beginning and in the middle of the growth cycle of that plant? You know, it's not that much money. It does multiple things if you're using organic. You get more produce out of it. I mean, I genuinely don't understand like the disdain for fertilizer in the garden.
So another look at that is why not learn to grow without it? All right. So we're going to let that silence roll for a second. There's sometimes I think about what in my garden, the things that, you know, you're trying to avoid doing, you know, you'd rather do a different way. And sometimes I feel like we introduce friction for not a whole lot of a good reason. Like maybe in the moment we feel like it's a good reason, like it's the honorable thing to do. And then at other times it's kind of like, you know, I sometimes look at and say the apocalypse that I've been preparing for, hence the whole reason why I garden. One of the reasons, you know, like, why not live an easier life now with growing food and then cross that bridge when or if I get to it? So I'm not proposing that truly, but it's worth asking the question. Why not?
It's not, you know, so first of all, I don't like it when you say that. That's why I got quiet, because I was trying to think about how to handle myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I know it gets all up in your... Mm-hmm.
It does. It gets all up in my bitness, and I just don't know how to handle it.
Your bits and pieces.
Yeah, my bits and pieces. But I mean, I think about it like... And I know what you're saying, and I think it's not that you can't grow without it. I think it's at that point you need to temper your expectations about what you're going to produce. I think that's what it comes down to, because the fact of the matter is you can grow without fertilizer. It's 100% possible. People do it all the time. It's, you know, and when I say that, again, we're talking about the definition of fertilizer for this episode, purchased bag fertilizer or water soluble fertilizer. We're not talking about compost teas or anything like that. But I think it's worth it. While let's just get into this fantastical world for just a minute and say, that's it, there's no more fertilizer. If you don't know how to mimic fertilizer now and the fertilizer is gone, then you're not going to be happy. But while you're doing this, while we're doing it day by day, play with it a little bit. Make some compost teas. Start making your own compost, Batavia. There, I called you out since you got my bits and pieces. I'll get in yours. You know, start amending your beds. Use those mulches. Turn them over. Do that kind of stuff. Practice cover crops. All that stuff is the same effect, just in different ways, to amend your garden and make that growth literally explode. You know, cover crops are a big thing, and we're going to be doing an episode on that. I'm going to be doing it in my garden this year, so I'm interested to see how that works out. I know that I've done it before, and I was very happy with the results. I just wasn't happy with the price I was paying for the seed. That was my biggest thing.
I've told you this before, potatoes. I was counting on my fingers because this is the point of the day I'm at. This is the sixth year that I'll be growing potatoes, white potatoes. Well, sweet potatoes too, but my comments around white potatoes. One, I love them. Two, you know, it's a very versatile crop. You know, it covers some ground, you know. Not quite literally, but yeah, literally. And when it comes to what you're bringing into your kitchen. But I also wanted to make sure I understood how to grow potatoes. Mm-hmm. Right. And each year I've tweaked things a bit. Mm-hmm. And I feel like coming into this year, I feel pretty good about what my plans are for growing potatoes and what that production is too. I'm closer to the point of being able to call what that production is in my garden configuration, along with everything else I'm growing. When it comes to the question around fertilizer, you can look at something like potatoes in the same way. If push comes to shove and I have no choice and I can't go and get the 5-pound bag of potatoes from the grocery store, do I want to start, you know, year one, trying to figure out how to grow potatoes?
No.
Or do I want to have that experience banked? So fertilizer, so for the record, I'm talking out of both sides here, right?
I know you are.
So for fertilizer, do I want to hone that skill where maybe, again, let's say I'm going to get the most out of my garden. I'm going to fertilize like it's nobody's business. Or do I want to do something that's a little bit more low key? Maybe the fertilizer batch that I have will last longer. Or do I want to go all in and say, forget anything I'm going to buy from the store? I look at it this way. As long as I'm going to the store to buy stuff for the garden, I'm okay with not tackling, you know, the non-store-bought fertilizer right now. I may come to a point in my garden career where that becomes a priority for me. It's just not the priority right now.
Right.
And I look at it and say the priority could shift easily if my garden starts to suffer, if my garden as a whole starts to look like the piddly, if I could find the picture of the pepper plant, where it's just like, this ain't it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, my instincts knew, like, no, this isn't it. If my entire garden starts to look like that, yeah, I'd be changing some things. It's a very personal decision, how much, how little, you know, what types, how often, all of that for your garden space. The one thing I will note is, for my years of growing in containers, it's one of the best things you can do for containers, just based on the makeup, you know.
Yeah.
What you put in that container soil-wise is all that that container is ever going to have, right? It's not going out searching the rest of the earth for stuff, right? And then you do absolutely wash away, you know, some of the nutrients that's in that soil when you water or when God waters those containers. So I found my containers perform most consistently throughout the season if I am coming in more regularly with applications of fertilizer.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up potatoes because I will say this, there's a specific potato fertilizer you can use and that a lot of people recommend, and I absolutely refuse to buy specific fertilizers for anything. I will use specific ingredients, but I refuse to go buy a potato fertilizer or a flower fertilizer or a corn fertilizer or something I refuse to do it. I figure that I will just use, you know, I buy two or three different things. And I think my fertilizing budget for the year is $40 for my garden. And that'll get me through the entire year, maybe a little bit more. So it's not that bad. And I make up for that in the amount of produce that we get at the end. So we typically will double that cost. Like if we pay $40, we'll get $80 worth of produce because of the fertilizer. So I do know that. So that is one where I do draw the line. Like I am not buying any specific fertilizer for anything. And I think that's one thing that will make you a better, more well-rounded gardener is when you know, like, hey, this plant needs more nitrogen. Let me give it this blood meal. Or, hey, this plant doesn't need it. Let me not give it this blood meal or bone meal or something like that. So yeah, there is that.
I'm looking at, I bought potato fertilizer 1 year and I really don't feel like I've experienced any big boom. And there's a part of it. It's just that this is the recommended formula for potatoes, right? This is what potatoes are said to need. And I'm looking at it and it's 3-4-3 for the NPK. And for that, again, specifically potato.
Okay, so you just get a bag of well-balanced 10-10-10 and throw a scoop of bone meal in and you've basically made 3-4-3.
And so I'm looking at another brand and it's 3-6-6. So, you know, when Young Bien lets me finish my thought, I say what, you know, he's about to say. I wasn't going to say and just add some bone meal, but it's the idea of you have the formula, you know, make the cake your way. You know, so yeah. What other things in your garden, you know, can benefit from that same formula, right? You know, so anywho, do what you want, what you will there. I do think that I can see a tinge of controversy around the subject.
Yeah. I mean, people hate it. But you know what they don't hate? They don't hate the planter wrap. And if you don't hate it or you don't love it, it's because you haven't tried it. You should definitely try it out because all of this is all about the planter wrap. That's how we make our gardens. I'm telling you, it'll help you plant it. If you're worried about fertilizer, you can take your fertilizing needs and make beds based on fertilizing needs. After all, that is part of the companion planting, which, by the way, did you know it gives you little green dots to tell you it's a companion plant? Yeah. And if you see the red dot, it means it's combative, which means you shouldn't put it together. And a lot of times it is a nutritional need for it. So check it out. It's on the Apple Store, Google Play. It is the planter app. You can use it on your phone, computer, or tablet. It's a great way to plan your garden, to go back and look at previous year plans, to organize your seeds. Now they're adding in flowers and different directions for the sun, all kinds of stuff. So check it out. That's the P-L-A-N-T-E-R. And if you use the link below, you will get a discount on all of the plans, especially the lifetime membership plan, which is very reasonably priced. Now.
No, wait.
Oh.
When I tell you that I happen to be, so, you know, I work with the season. So my social media presence is higher during the growing season. And so I miss a lot, right? And I'm going to tell you that it was my purpose to come to Instagram and Peter had put up from the planter app a story, you know, those are only 24 hours about the flowers. He showed a picture of the app with the flowers. And you want to talk about someone that said, hold on to who I was talking to. And so I stopped and I went directly to my app and I started swapping out because I had everything as a sunflower before, putting in the real flowers. Oh, a happy gal.
Yeah, it's so visual with the drag and drop. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. All right.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you, Peter. We love you, and we love your app, more importantly.
Not to be confused with Peter Parker.
Who's that, other than Spider-Man?
Yeah, I mean, that's who he is. I mean, arguably, our Peter is probably more
important. He's a Spider-Man of the gardening world.
Absolutely.
Our friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. There it is. All right, this question of the day comes from the Facebook gardening group, Backyard Gardens Community Garden. Come join it. Free to join. And it's from Tara.
Hey, Tara.
I think it's Tara.
Hey, Tara.
I don't know. Either way, we got you covered.
Hey, girl.
Hey, girl. So it says, hello, I really love the show. I'm completely new to gardening, and I'm getting ready to build a couple of raised beds and start some veggies. And your podcasts have been so helpful. Well, we're glad we could help you. The question, though, is when you direct sow, how many seeds do you tend to use in one spot? Bada bing, bada boom.
I'm going to let young Ben answer because this is one of those do as I recommend and not as I do.
For you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of times if I'm doing beans or peas or something like that, I'll put one seed in per spot. Everything else, I typically do three, just as a safety measure. With the beans and stuff, as soon as they usually pop up pretty fast. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, then I'll come back and put them back in. But, you know, when you buy beans, you don't usually get a lot of seeds. So I'd like to make them stretch. Mm-hmm. And that goes because we're expert seed sellers and all that. It's just because of the weight of the seed. So I really am careful about that. But typically, that's all I do. Everything else. And some stuff, too, like watermelons and stuff. Melons, they say to put three in each hole. So, you know, you can try that. But typically, it's three. I can't think of anything else. Okra, I usually do two because I don't want to take a chance of one, wasting a seed, and two, having anything. But I've never really had bad germination with okra either. So there is that. If it's a really fine seed, like, you know, basil or some flowers, they're almost like dust. I just do like a light sprinkling. Mm-hmm. And just try not to get too heavy handed with it.
Yeah.
But also know that if you do something like that with those and you come back, you've got like a mat of like seedlings coming up, then you can just take like little pinches of them if you're careful and move them around, and you can spread them out that way. And then radishes, I'd usually put one seed in per radish, like anything like a root or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to pick up where you left off with roots. I begrudgingly end up thinning roots, but I'll just do a very close line, knowing that, you know, even if I get 80% germination, some of those are going to be too close together. So I'll come back in for something like carrots, for something like radishes that are going to be kind of a larger seed. I'll do one. Other thing, beets and things over there. So those root crops that are a little bit larger, I'll do one. Anything that is quick to germinate and then quicker to grow, I'm stingy. This is the recommendation is, I'd say, two at a minimum, but I normally do one. Cucumbers, squash, those things are going to come up quickly. And if they don't come up, I'm going to know to resow, so I don't spend the extra seed. Yeah. Other things like melons, which for my growing area, I got a small window, and I've learned this over the years. I have a small window, so I need to hedge my bets. So instead of sowing one seed, I'll do your three. So generally speaking, if it is something that's quick that I can recover from, if it doesn't do what it's supposed to do, if it's quick germinating and the season to grow is shorter, then I'll do just a single seed. If I have some risk of I need all the time that I can get for that, like a melon, then I'll do multiples. And then anything that has fine seed similar to Ben, I'll kind of do a broadcast and worry about the rest once everything starts to germinate. And that's just based on time management. I don't want to have to come back many multiple times. Sometimes carrot seeds can take 10, 14, 20 days, you know, to germinate.
Yeah. Yeah, and then by that time, you may have missed your window. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about a month almost. Yeah. So yeah, you just, you were saying something and I totally slipped my mind. I was going to say something to add to it. Oh, well, it's gone. That's what happens. It gets down in there and it goes out in my ear. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah.
It may have been helpful.
I don't think that there's a wrong or a right way. Sometimes I'll look at a seed package and say, by the time these seeds get old, where the germination is really problematic, if I don't feel like I have tomatoes that I started today, which is much earlier than you heard, listen to this episode, I'm like, if I grow tomatoes from this package for 5 years, I could basically sow twice as many tomatoes, you know, yeah. Like I could sow in each of these sale pockets, you know, again, not direct sowing, 2 seeds per and still not run out of seeds in 5 years. Right. You know, so I've become a little bit more liberal when it comes to sowing those kinds of things where you have a bunch of seeds. Lettuce. I mean, I'm just throwing lettuce like confetti.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I was going to say is I'll look at like I've got one of our packs of cucumber seeds here, and there's enough cucumber seeds based on my row that I may want to do I may look at it and say, hey, I want to do a different variety, mm-hmm. not really concerned about it. And I may put multiple in just to kind of get everything even with each other. And then there's other things where, you know, we got like for this year, for instance, I had bought some like whatever seeds I bought. It came with like 10 seeds. You better believe that one seed went in each hole. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I didn't really want to take that chance. So, yeah, it just depends on the quantity of seeds and how much I want to do. But typically speaking, 3 for regular, 1 for, you know, big fat seeds or something like that. So there you go, Tara. I hope that helps you in your new garden. Thank you for being with us, and thanks for starting a raised bed. You are embarking on a journey that you will love for the rest of your life and pass down through generations, and that is amazing. And on that note, everybody, go get some damn fertilizer. No, I'm just joking. You do what you want in your garden. We don't really care. We just want to point you in the direction that so you can make the decision for yourself, because you know what we do here. We learn to grow. But ultimately, we grow for change.
See ya.
Now you know why people feel like celebrating at harvest time.
All over the world, people have feasting and good times when the crops have been gathered in.
Thanks for checking out the show. If you like what we're doing and you'd like to support us, you can become a patron at patreon.com/backyardgardens, or you can be an Apple subscriber, and in both of those, you'll get an extra episode every month. You can also make a one-time PayPal donation with the link below, and you can get all kinds of gardening gear like t-shirts and mugs and cups from the link below at Teespring, and we have an Amazon store which has all the products that we use and recommend in our gardens, and it helps support our show. And we also add to this list periodically, so be sure to check it out periodically to see if there's anything that you need for your garden. Everything that you do, including a like and a subscribe and even a review, will help us learn to grow and grow for change.
See ya.